It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power. And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite teabagging redneck, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am Mark Gillar. Our guest today is John Ziegler, the documentary filmmaker behind the work Media Malpractice, How Obama Got Elected and Palin Was Targeted. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Mark.
Absolutely. Now, I know at one point you considered calling the movie How Obama Got Elected and Palin Was Smeared. Why did you change the title?
Wow, I've never been asked that. I don't even know. I guess we did publicly say that at some point, so I was wondering how you even knew that.
We exchanged a couple of emails at that time.
Oh, okay. Frankly, it was because Governor Palin didn't like the word smeared, to be frank about it. I've never told anybody that before publicly, but that's the truth of the matter. Frankly, I didn't really like smeared either, but that was just a working title. And when after we did the interview with Governor Palin from her home, and then decided you know what the final product was going to be like, and started to get to issues like the title, I ran that past Governor Palin, and she didn't like the word smeared, so the word targeted was I thought better for everybody and probably more accurate.
And of course now, given the post Tucson climate, targeted is a bad word.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know whether or not you grandfather in political correctness or not. With the word targeted in the film title, I guess we're politically incorrect now. But I happen to think that it's all just a bunch of baloney and just a way to try to demonize conservatives in general and Sarah Palin in particular by moving the goalposts. I mean, there's no better example of how they have targeted Sarah Palin than the Tucson situation, because what they did was they changed the rules after the game and they judged her by completely different standards than they judge anybody else. And that's really the essence of the anti-Palin media bias. I've never suggested that she shouldn't be held to a high standard. What I've always suggested, and what I prove in the film Media Malpractice, is that she was held and has been held and continues to be held to a standard that is completely different than anyone else and totally unrealistic.
I got that impression. I was just watching one of your interviews, and you did a lot of really feisty interviews when the film was being launched. And the one I'm referencing is the second interview with David Schuster. And first he was trying to say that Sarah Palin had never come out and said which publications she reads. And after you pressed him, he said, okay, well, she said she reads USA Today and a couple of others. But then he asked, well, did you think about asking her what was on page one of the newspaper today? And my thought was, no matter which newspaper she would have said she read, if a guy like Schuster was questioning her, he would have followed up with, well, what was on the first page today? And if she'd have listed every single article on the front page, his next step would have been, you know, okay, well, Mrs. Johnson has a sewing machine for sale in the classifieds. What's she want for that sewing machine, Sarah? Oh, you don't know? I thought you said you read this paper. You know, I mean, it's gotcha journalism.
Well, I agree with you in concept, but frankly, just the notion. I mean, think about it this way. What would be the odds of anybody daring to ask the Messiah, Barack Obama, during the campaign, first of all, what he read, and second of all, if he said he read a publication, what was on page one of that publication any particular day? They would be roundly castigated, tossed out of the media world, sent to Siberia for the racist, clearly racist, intention of trying to show that Barack Obama might not be that intelligent, might not be as well read as we'd like to think or whatever. I mean, it would have been considered to be totally racist to do such a thing and inappropriate. So right there, you don't even have to go as far as you did to prove the double standard. No one ever asked Barack Obama what he reads and certainly never would have questioned it had they asked him the question, and had he answered in any way they wanted him to answer. And that answer to Katie Couric is one of many very misunderstood answers that Sarah Palin gave. If you understand the full context of that situation, it's much more understandable what Sarah Palin did there. And the whole Katie Couric interview, I believe, is a farce and a fraud. And it's amazing to me. I got arrested at USC back in April of 2009 because USC was giving Katie Couric a journalism award, a Walter Cronkite journalism award, specifically for her Sarah Palin interview and specifically for its impact on the election, which, by the way, of course, is not supposed to be the way by which journalism is judged. Of course, journalism is now dead in the post-Obama 2008 Sarah Palin targeted election. And, you know, it's just really amazing. The whole thing is absurd. But, you know, that's why I did the documentary film Media Malpractice and why it's still relevant today.
I saw that arrest. I have to say you looked like you were having more fun getting arrested than anybody I've ever seen. You laughed all the way through it, except for when the handcuffs were too tight.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't actually laughed because it gave, a wrong impression of what was really going on. My laughter was more... It wasn't really that I was having fun. It was I was laughing because I just was so shocked. The whole thing was so absurd. I mean, here I was not being allowed to ask people questions as they entered an award ceremony, which I was not allowed into, for journalism awards. And even more absurd, I was not allowed to give away copies of my Sarah Palin interview, which I believe – we gave a far clearer vision of the truth than Katie Couric's interview with Sarah Palin, which was literally 100 feet away being given a Walter Cronkite Journalism Award. You couldn't, you know, the irony, you look up the definition of irony in the dictionary, and it probably can't even be fulfilled by that. I mean, it's just so beyond irony what occurred that day. And so I couldn't make it work in my brain, and laughter was about the only reaction I could have.
I have to admit the whole thing looked really silly on tape, the idea that you had done anything wrong for which you should be arrested. And I think ultimately a officer or an authority came on the scene that realized that they were looking down the barrel. Oh, boy, there's another violent reference, but looking down the barrel of a future lawsuit if they didn't let you go immediately. Did you consider litigation at any point after that was over?
I did. And as a matter of fact, we made a very generous settlement offer to USC the next day, which was basically just we wanted a page in the USC newspaper to explain why I was there and an apology. And that was it. No money. But, you know, they turned us down on that, which was ridiculous. And then I had not one but two law firms give me a contract to represent me in a lawsuit against USC. One was right wing, one was left wing, and it's a very, very complex situation. But at the very last moment, both entities bailed on it because I think what happened was the right wing law firm realized that if this went all the way through to its fruition, which it easily could have, that this could have been a landmark case, but for reasons that might end up being against a conservative's belief systems. In other words, they were fearing that this could end up curtailing property rights or private property rights in California if we were successful. And the liberal decided, I think, that you know what, being perceived as protecting Sarah Palin was probably not in their best interests in the long run. So both situations end up blowing up at the very last possible moment, and we never did file a lawsuit. Whether or not, you know, I regret that or not, I don't know. I mean, I know there was an injustice done that day. I was detained for 25 minutes. I was publicly embarrassed. I had my wrists, you know, injured, or I don't know to what extent, I don't know. But, I mean, if you look at the video, it's pretty clear that there was some injury there. I don't know whether or not that was the right thing, but I'm not really a person that believes in litigation as the way to solve all problems. Would I have liked to have seen that run its course and see what would happen? Yeah. But, unfortunately, there was no way to make it happen. I mean, I tried just about everything I could. And it just didn't work out.
I'm sorry it didn't, because I definitely felt you had clear damages in that situation. I have to tell you, John, I don't want to embarrass you, but I have to tell you that I'm a real admirer because of the way you went behind enemy lines, as your film was launching, and, you know, you didn't shy away from the CNNs and the MSNBCs and the, you know, frankly, The View and other places like that where you knew you were going to be hostily treated, and you did it anyway. I think my favorite interview, as I watched various interviews that you had conducted at that time, was the Nora O'Donnell interview after the David Letterman remark about Bristol Palin. At least we think it was about Bristol Palin. And David Letterman had insulted both Sarah Palin. He had made a reference to her perfecting that slutty stewardess look. And he had, you know, of course, suggested that Sarah's daughter, presumably Bristol, had gotten, quote-unquote, knocked up during the middle of a Yankees game during the stretch period. And what they did, as I recall, is they showed Letterman attacking Sarah Palin, but then back-to-back with that showed Sarah's reaction to the attack on Bristol Palin, or possibly even her younger daughter, who was actually with her that day. I think it was Willow. And mm-hmm. you tried to point that out to Nora, and I don't think she even got what you were saying.
Yeah, it's possible you're actually referring to a Contessa Brewer interview.
Sorry, that was Contessa Brewer. I apologize. Contessa Brewer.
Yeah, because at the end of that interview, she actually cuts off my microphone, which is pretty hilarious. Again, given the entire topic and nature of MSNBC. But, you know, she was taken aback, I think, immediately when I was introduced and thanked her, because I've said it's always good to go at it with the official network of Barack Obama. And so I think right off the bat, she was probably taken aback. And then the most bizarre part of that interview was after I destroyed her on the Sarah Palin David Letterman thing, she starts bringing up all sorts of other issues that aren't even related to the topic. I think there was all sorts of just strange things.
I remember
things
one of them. I think there had been a survey about
the leaders of the Republican Party.
Right. And she wanted to know that this is what was great about Contessa on this one. And I'm sorry, Nora, for saying it was you at first. But what Contessa did was she asked you about a survey that came out after you had done the Palin interview and wanted to know what Sarah Palin thought about that. I thought that was amazing.
Something along those lines, and very odd. Clearly, it was almost like a panic type of reaction, because it didn't have anything to do with the actual topic.
Well, I think you're definitely right about that. It was interesting to see her get that sort of panicked deer in the headlights look as she was doing that interview. But is she still over there? I don't watch MSNBC, so.
I believe that she is, yes. David Schuster is not. Keith Olbermann is not. CNN got rid of, what the hell was his name? Jeez, I forget the guy, Rick Sanchez. He's gone from CNN. He was a big part of my movie. So several people who are prominently disaffiliated from malpractice. Yes, Campbell Brown is not there either. You're right. So that's really at least four figures in my movie that have no longer have their gigs at CNN or MSNBC. So he must be doing something right.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I found most disgusting during the 2008 election was when Campbell Brown tried to fake concern for Bristol Palin. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
How did her mother do this to her? I mean, how can her mother subject her to all this criticism globally? And I was just thinking, Campbell, you don't give a damn about Bristol Palin. Just stop.
Actually, I agree with you, Mark, but I'll give you actually one better, although it's a similar situation and it's a similar MO. I thought the most transparent thing Campbell Brown did was when the $150,000 clothes story came out about Sarah Palin, remember that one? That she allegedly spent $150,000 on her clothes? Campbell Brown very dramatically came out and did an editorial condemning the sexist media for obsessing about this story that clearly a man would not have to face, right? Okay, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to, if you want to pick this hill to defend Sarah Palin on because you think it benefits your purposes, that's great. But here's the funny part. And we prove this in the movie. She then, after that editorial, spends the next 3 days obsessing about the story because it was so good for ratings. It's classic. And frankly, Fox News does this a lot too, where one of their favorite things to do is to take a situation where there is something that's too racy or too sexy on television and condemn it all while showing video of whatever that sexy subject matter is continually just because they know it's good for ratings. I mean, so they get to literally have their cake and eat it too. But that's what Campbell Brown was doing in that situation.
Yeah, I was wondering that as I was watching this story. You know, I think the show is called Skins, but I'm not sure. The HBO alleged kiddie porn thing. I mean, we keep hearing from
MTV.
Fox how horrible it is. On MTV, yeah. We keep hearing from Fox how horrible, you know, MTV is for having this on the air, but yet they keep showing stuff. So, yeah, I guess they all do that. I have a question for you regarding your appearance on The View. Now, obviously, when you go on there, your only possible ally is going to be Hasselbeck. What was that like, both prior to and after the show?
Very interesting, actually. Before the show, the girls were very nice. In fact, Whoopi Goldberg came into my dressing room. We spoke for about a half hour. And I think, you know, she gave me some slack on the show because of that. Everybody was pretty much as you would expect. Joy Behar was a complete bitch. both on and off the air. As a matter of fact, when I left the show, I went off the set after I was done, and I went, you know, to go backstage, and there's a little curtain there, and I went through the curtain, and I almost literally bumped into Joy Behar, who had left, I don't know, to go to the bathroom or something, I don't know, and she was kind of startled, and I was kind of startled, and I kind of instinctually just stuck out my hand and said, you know, thank you very much, you know, because I was leaving, and she said, thank you, for what? And she wouldn't shake my hand, and I thought that was very odd, considering the fact that, you know, while we were certainly combative, I was incredibly nice to her in comparison to what I could have been. Considering how idiotic she was during the appearance. So she was pretty much as expected. And then after the show, I went on Barbara Walters' radio show, and people can hear this audio. I think of all the things I've done, this is the most underreported element, because I think it's fascinating, but it goes to show you, you know, that if it doesn't happen on television, it doesn't really happen in today's media world. If it happens on radio, it really doesn't make any impact. But I did a radio show, and frankly, I think she got confronted probably for the first time in her 75-year media career, and she ends up acknowledging to me that she was under the impression, Barbara Walters, that Sarah Palin had actually said during the campaign that she could see Russia from her house.
Wow.
Now, of course, we know that that's not something Sarah Palin ever said.
That was
something Tina Fey said on Saturday Night Live. But if you listen to my interview with Barbara Walters, and there are clips on the internet if you want to find that specifically. In fact, I wrote about this recently when Barbara Walters referred to Sarah Palin as uninformed. There's an article at our website, howobamagotelected.com, where I linked to that audio of Barbara Walters reeling that of the two, there's no question who by far is the more uninformed, when dear Barbara Walters actually thought that it was Sarah Palin who said, I can see Russia from my house. Unfortunately, Barbara Walters was not alone among Obama voters, because as we did a poll of Obama voters, it proved that over 80% of Obama voters thought that Sarah Palin had said that she could see Russia from her house. And again, just for the record, Sarah Palin told Charlie Gibson, as an aside to Alaska's relationship with Russia, she said that you can see Russia from land here in Alaska, which is a stone cold hard fact.
Yeah, I remember her on one occasion saying there are parts of Alaska from which you can see parts of Russia, and I think a film crew actually went there and documented that you can very easily see parts of Russia from parts of Alaska. So it was a 100% accurate statement, and the fact that everyone thinks she said the other, John, and let me know what you think, is pretty indicative of where we are now when most people get their news from Comedy Central and from Saturday Night Live. You know, I mean, people don't even separate news from comedy anymore.
Oh, no, and that's exactly right. And I got criticized for saying that in another Norah O'Donnell interview. This was an interview I did after I did the Today Show when we released the film for the first time, that was Norah O'Donnell's one attack point on me. That's where I guess she thought I was most vulnerable, because I was using Saturday Night Live clips in the movie, as if somehow that wasn't news media. And I just thought, well, first of all, the title of the film is Media Malpractice. And second of all, and you can't claim, obviously, that it's not media, but second of all, there's a hell of a lot of evidence that those types of shows have more impact and are seen by many people as news than actual news, if there is such a thing as actual news anymore. I'm a firm believer that that the comedy shows, whether they be the late night shows and Jay Leno or Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert or Saturday Night Live, I believe that a narrative that takes hold in those shows is much more impactful on who actually wins a presidential election, because it influences those independent voters that aren't really paying very much attention and are easily swayed because they don't have the facts to back up their opinion, than, for instance, something that happens on the evening newscasts. I truly believe that, and it's a sad statement, but I think the evidence backs me up.
I think so, too, and you can go all the way back to Richard Nixon and Watergate. It's rumored that when he saw even Johnny Carson making fun of him, he knew the end was near as far as his political career was concerned. So, this has been an impact for a long time. You know, while I've got you on the show, why don't we dispel a few myths? You know, you referenced the $150 worth of clothes. My understanding was the people who went out and bought those clothes didn't know her exact size. So they bought a size up and a size down, so three sizes for every outfit, just to make sure they would have something that would fit her, because she wasn't going for a fitting. They were buying the clothes in her absence. So is that not correct? Or
that's my understanding. Not only is that my understanding, but of course it wasn't just for her, it was for the whole family. Plus, my understanding is that the clothes were returned. I mean, it was the biggest non-story of all time. I mean, as if her clothes, especially as a woman, and aren't the same thing, and she said this, aren't the same thing as buying, backdrops for a stage or any other element of stagecraft. I mean, it's really just, that's all it was. It wasn't like somehow she was this diva going to Rodeo Drive and deciding that, you know, she needed the best clothes possible because, ooh, I'm a vice presidential nominee. I mean, I'm relatively certain that Barack Obama and Joe Biden probably spent, a similar amount of money. And this was the Republican Party that spent the money. It wasn't as if this was somehow taxpayer money being used from the general election campaign fund or whatever. I mean, it was the most ridiculous story that you can conceive of, but the only reason why it was a story was because she's a woman. And of course, the irony of that is that as a woman, she would be held to a much higher standard of wardrobe than a man, and therefore probably had far more right to be spending that kind of money than anybody else. So the whole thing was utterly ridiculous, and really had a huge impact because it unfortunately the world we live in these days. If a story is easily understood and resonates with the stupid people, then you're in trouble. And that story certainly fit into that category.
Well, I saw something a little more sinister taking place. I think the left knew that a big part of Sarah's appeal was that she was a down-home girl and she was just like everybody else, and it was just like one of us being put in the spotlight. And they looked at this and said, well, let's make it clear to all those stupid Tea Partiers who are following her because she's, quote-unquote, one of us, that she's not one of you anymore. She's buying $150,000 worth of clothes. She's gone Hollywood. So if you think that Sarah Palin is a representative of the common folk, you're wrong. I thought that was part of it.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, that's why when they saw the story, they decided they could make a narrative out of it. But frankly, it was a ratings story first. I mean, there's nothing that gets better ratings than, you know, it allowed alleged news organizations to pretend they were talking about politics while really talking about a subject that you might see on Access Hollywood or Extra. I mean, that's because, you know, women love talking about clothes. And there's nothing that, you know, I frankly think a large part of what drives the Sarah Palin media obsession is that there are an awful lot of women out there that love seeing a woman who appears to have it all and is a lot better looking than they are be taken down a peg or two. They love it because it makes them feel better about themselves. And that was certainly, I think, evident in the clothes story.
I think another story that really grabbed attention at that time was the aerial hunting of wolves in Alaska. The first time I heard the story was when Joy Behar, your buddy, was on Larry King, and she was like, I don't know if anybody's mentioned it, but this woman is mean to animals. And I thought, you know, John Kerry has been photographed in the camouflage outfit, the gun out hunting. Same thing for Bill Clinton. Same thing for Al Gore. When did Joy Behar ever gripe about Al Gore, Bill Clinton, or John Kerry being a hunter? But because Sarah Palin is a conservative woman, the idea that she allowed a predator control program to take place in her state apparently offended them. And then you had Ashley Judd, who is frankly a big supporter of not only abortion but partial birth abortion, talking about how cruel and inhumane it was to allow the aerial hunting of wolves in Alaska. What do you make of all this?
Well, I agree with everything you just said. I'm not sure that I could really add very much to it. You know, I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment, although I'm not a gun owner, and I've never really felt like it was that big of an issue. I do think that there's a fundamental difference between animals and humans, which apparently some liberals have a difficult time grasping. But there's no question that was another example of a massive double standard.
I'd like to head back to Tucson for just a minute. What was your first thought when you heard that Sarah Palin was being accused of instigating the Tucson mass murder?
Well, another very interesting question, because I was not at all surprised. In fact, I had told Sarah and Todd that that was what was going to happen about 15 minutes after hearing of the tragedy, and obviously being overwhelmed like everybody else, thinking it through. I had I don't know if I would call it a eureka moment, but certainly a revelation came to me that, oh my gosh, they're going to blame Sarah Palin for this. And this was before, really, we knew anything at all. But I saw that, you know, obviously Congressman Giffords was a Democrat who was on Sarah Palin's target list. Obviously, this was in Arizona. Obviously, it was done by a gun. Obviously, they're going to want this to be a Tea Party situation. And because Congressman Giffords voted in favor of the health care law and had a Tea Party opponent that Sarah Palin endorsed, it was very clear to me that that was going to be the media narrative. And I emailed Sarah and Todd, and I said, I know this sounds crazy, and you may already have figured it out yourself, but look out. You need to be very careful how you respond here, because they're going to come after you on this. And Todd responded back saying, we know. And this was within a half hour of the actual attack, and it's utterly obscene and absurd and more than sad, but, you know, that's the world we now live in, where it was very clear what was going to happen. So, you know, my reaction when I first heard that it was actually happening was hardly surprising. I unfortunately saw it coming.
Sarah was at first criticized for not responding, and then when she did respond, it was about a 7-minute response on video, and the entire media coverage focused on two words, blood libel. Did you see that coming as well?
You know, I did not see, I didn't know the history of the word blood libel. So I did not see the obsession with those two words, which, by the way, is another example of a massive double standard. Do you really think that if Barack Obama had ever used that phrase in a legitimate way, which clearly this was a legitimate way, I mean, here she was being accused by multiple mainstream media outlets of it being at least an accessory to murder, mass murder. If that's not blood libel, I don't know what is. Especially, by the way, and see, this is what's so frustrating and why I made the movie Media Malpractice, because I was trying to prevent this, but unfortunately I guess I failed. Part of what people don't understand about the blood libel statement is that if you're living in Sarah Palin's world for the last 2.5 years, and you know the real narrative of what has transpired with the media agenda against her, then you have no problem whatsoever with the concept of a blood libel against her. But see, to the vast majority of the American people, they don't understand the level to which the media has been targeting her for the last 2.5 years. So they think, oh, a couple of left-wing nut jobs kind of sort of blamed her for a shooting, and now she's gone all crazy with this blood libel thing. That, in their world, that's what happened, but that's not what occurred. This is the culmination of 2.5 years of insanity towards Sarah Palin. And so in that world, the real world, I had no problem at all. I thought the speech was fantastic. And I certainly have no belief at all that if Barack Obama or a liberal had used the phrase in a similar situation, that they would not have been criticized. In fact, they probably would have been praised for having the courage to stand up and protect them, defend themselves. So it's another example of exactly what Sarah Palin talked about in that speech, which is if they didn't have double standards, they wouldn't have any standards at all.
Well, you know, we don't even have to guess about whether or not the media would have gone after a liberal, even though the gentleman's name escapes me. We had a Democrat using the term blood libel on the House floor within a week of Sarah Palin using it, and there was no uproar in the media whatsoever. And he was not referencing Sarah Palin's video when he said it. I mean, he was just using the term on his own separately. So I think for many of us,
I didn't even hear about that.
I'll email it to you. But yeah, so within a week, we had a Democrat using the term with complete impunity. So just another example of the double standard that we see out there. The whole idea to begin with that a fan of Hitler and Karl Marx, who worships a skull in his parents' backyard and has put a flag burning on YouTube and smokes pot, would be a Sarah Palin Tea Party fan is just so ridiculous to begin with. But I was shocked when a survey came out showing that 57% of Democrats still believe that Sarah Palin, conservative talk radio, and Fox News are at least partly responsible for shooting.
Well, the whole thing is absurd. And, you know, it's utterly ridiculous. And, of course, and I mean this half-jokingly, but, you know, of course, let's follow the logic here. He clearly, this nut job was clearly not a conservative, not a Republican, didn't vote in the last election. So who knew that Sarah Palin had so much influence with independent voters? I thought she was supposed to be completely ineffectual with people outside of the base. And of course, she had no influence over this nut job. And frankly, we don't know why he did this. We can guess. You know, we have enough evidence to make some educated guesses. And frankly, a far, far more educated guess as far as influence would be, why is it that these conspiracy nut jobs, specifically the so-called documentary filmmakers behind the Loose Change organization that made the 9/11 conspiracy movie, which he apparently, Lautner, was a huge fan of, how come they haven't been held responsible at all? Because I personally believe that they had a huge influence on this from the standpoint of, if you are somebody who believes that the government was capable of perpetrating 9/11, then it is far easier for you to rationalize the notion of going and assassinating a representative of that government, because you have been duped into believing that the government and anyone involved in it is so corrupt and so insidious that they could pull off something like 9/11. That there's a far greater nexus there than anything related to Sarah Palin's map of 20 targeted congressional districts, but yet we don't hear one word about that, and it really drives me crazy.
Well, that's because 9/11 truthers are liberals, so they don't want to make that connection. Another example of not making an obvious connection was the guy who held the Discovery Channel at gunpoint, and he was a big Al Gore fan and, you know, felt like the Discovery Channel needed to do more regarding its coverage of global warming. And yet I didn't see one liberal news outlet trying to draw that connection between Al Gore and the gunman at the Discovery Channel.
That's another excellent example. You're right. I mean, that's a great example. Of course, that wasn't a massacre, but, you know, even if it had been, I'm sure Al Gore would never have been given any of the blame for anything that transpired there. That's a great example.
I saw a recent interview that you did. You've actually added some information to your film, and you have some examples of the top, some of the top examples of media malpractice in the year 2010, which of course just ended. Lay those on us. What did you see in 2010 that, if you had made the movie in 2010, would have been included?
Well, just so people understand, we re-released the movie in the fall of last year with a brand new DVD with about 50 or so minutes of extra features. And most importantly, the film is now available in major stores and on video on demand, on most video on demand outlets. At one point, it was on every single video on demand outlet in the country. But, you know, it tends to cycle on and off now, so you'll have to look for it. But it's still available there. So it's more widely available than probably any conservative documentary in history. And as far as 2010, I think what you're referring to there is an appearance I did on Fox News where they asked me to go through the most egregious examples in 2010 of media malpractice. And I think I created a list of five examples that really didn't get a lot of attention there. I think they were the most underestimated examples of media malpractice. One was, speaking of Sarah Palin, was the 60 Minutes hit job that they did on Sarah Palin at the beginning of the year, where they allegedly were talking about the book Game Change, and yet here's a 13-minute story on a book about the 2008 election. They don't even mention, they spend zero time on the guy who actually won that election, and they spend almost 11 of 13 minutes on the losing vice presidential candidate, who wasn't even the major focus of the book itself. And then they decide to interview Steve Schmidt and basically give him an open forum to bash Sarah Palin with no rebuttal whatsoever from the other side. And it was a complete hit piece, full of inaccuracies and distortions. And
really, you know, Governor Palin did not fight back on that, partially, I think, because the next day she was actually announcing that she was becoming a Fox News Channel contributor and therefore didn't think it was worth getting into. But it was outrageous. I also think that the painting of the Tea Party as being racist, which was a huge narrative in 2010, was outrageous. I thought that the non-coverage of the Supreme Court nomination was absurd, considering how important that is and how inexperienced and how liberal Kagan is and how long she'll likely be on the court. I thought that was absurd. I think just about anything related to Barack Obama got ridiculously favorable news coverage that was unfair in 2010. And there's one that's escaping my memory.
The last one would be the Bush tax cuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought this was an example that, and frankly, Fox was even surprised when I hit them on this, but thank you for that, Mark. Yeah, this to me crystallizes the way the media bias works, and frankly, how far we as conservatives have to go in fighting this fight and how we're losing this fight. The entire Bush tax cut debate was framed as, are we going to extend the Bush tax cuts? Now, that's absurd on its face, because the premise of the phrase Bush tax cuts, even forgetting the fact that, you know, obviously the term Bush is intended by the media to have a negative connotation to it, but the premise there is that there was some sort of magic to the tax rates before the so-called Bush tax cuts, as if that was ordained by God, that's where the rates were supposed to be, which is absurd, but it has an inherent, very dramatic bias to it, because, you know, these are, and also the term tax cuts, because we weren't cutting taxes, we were simply keeping the rates where they are. So,
very true.
So that whole debate really bothered me.
Wasn't it interesting that for years and years and years they were called the Bush tax cuts for the rich? And when you talk to liberals, they'd say, oh, yeah, Bush, he cut taxes, but only for the rich. And then as the Bush tax cuts were about to expire and they realized that, you know, mom and pop America were going to see their tax rates go up and that they would know it, they suddenly started saying, well, we'll extend the tax cuts for the middle class, but not for the wealthy. And,
well,
you know, I don't
know. You make a great point, Mark. But, see, I actually think this is an example of our weakness as conservatives. Because even when we win battles, which we actually do because the facts are on our side. So here this was a massive win. To get Barack Obama, an avowed socialist, to sign off on extending the tax cuts of the guy he got elected campaigning against and vilifying those very same tax cuts is an unbelievable victory. And yet the vast majority of the American people outside of the Fox News Channel watching base really has no idea what Obama admitted there and what the entire liberal establishment admitted there. So we don't. While we won the battle, in the larger context of the war, I don't think we get as much mileage out of it as we should. And this happens all the time,
You're saying there was no acknowledgement of the fact that liberals were admitting that tax cuts actually bring the economy back and increase federal revenue?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. They essentially weren't forced to admit that we're right, but yet it's not that narrative isn't going to take hold among people who actually impact elections. The middle third of the American people that aren't paying very much attention. So it's really frustrating, and I think conservatives are. And granted, we have a lot going against us because of this media bias, but, you know, we do a lousy job of really getting the greatest benefit out of winning the battles that we do win.
Do you think this has any potential to be Barack Obama's read my lips moment? Do you think that'll be brought back up in 2012 the way George Herbert Walker Bush was beaten over the head with read my lips, no new taxes?
No. I mean, I personally believe that Barack Obama, barring some sort of national security disaster or the economy getting much worse, I mean, he did say something very dangerous last night, I thought, when he said, now that the worst of the recession is over, I thought that was a dangerous thing for him to say. Because if by chance, you know, unemployment goes up between now and 2012 and the housing market gets worse and maybe we get some inflation, then, you know, guess what? I mean, guess who's going to, you know, he's going to be beaten over the head with that, because it was at the State of the Union. It was a very dramatic statement and all of that. He can't avoid that. But barring something like that, I think he's a lock for re-election. I really do. I mean, I just can't see how he loses, you know, largely because none of these negative narratives are going to take hold with the people who actually impact elections. And it's because of the media bias in favor of him and against anyone who opposes him, specifically Sarah Palin. And that's why I did the documentary, why I'm still promoting the documentary, Media Malpractice.
And, of course, now with 50 additional minutes of footage, tell our listeners again how they can get a hold of a copy.
Well, it's in major stores, Best Buy, you know, places like that. You can see all the stores that it's available on at our website, which is www.howobamagotelected. That's howobamagotelected.com. There's a page there set up for the re-release. So it explains, you know, what's in the re-release, what stores you can get it in, what video on demand outlets you can see the film on, everything you need to know, plus all the videos, all the poll results, all the Obama voter video, everything we've done in this 2.5 year journey is at www.howobamagotelected.com.
And whenever this actually runs, we will have a picture of how Obama got elected, and all one would need to do is click on that pic and be transported directly to Amazon.com, where they would be able to order their own copy, or again, if they can't wait, they can run down to their local video store and grab a copy there. One last question, what's the future hold for John Ziegler?
I really have no idea. This has been the most interesting and at times the most difficult journey of my rather a bizarre career. I frankly think that my career has been harmed greatly in a lot of ways. My life has been harmed greatly in a lot of ways because of this quest that I've been on for 2.5 years to try to correct the historical narrative about what really happened, the historical record about what really happened in the 2008 election and what's happened since with both Barack Obama and Sarah Palin. I actually blame conservatives more for that than liberals, although liberals have certainly caused me a lot of difficulty as well. So I'm somewhat limited in what I'm able to do going forward. You know, it's not, I don't know what I'm going to do. I probably will not continue to make documentary films because one thing I've learned is that, you know, unless you have a miracle happen like Sarah Palin, you know, basically provided for this film, you can't make it work as a conservative unless somehow you're a massive celebrity. There's just no way to make it work. There's too much dead set against you. I was able to make Media Malpractice work. It probably should have been a grand slam home run. Instead, it was probably a ground rule double, but I'll take that. But I'm also smart enough to know that if I tried it again, it would probably be a strikeout just because there's just too many factors set against you in general and set against me in particular. So, you know, I can see a lot of different possibilities, but I think it's quite possible that you won't be hearing a lot from me in the coming years.
Oh, wow, that's sad. My hope for you was that Sarah Palin would be elected president and you could be press secretary.
Well, you know, a lot of people have fantasized about that possibility. Of course, That would be, I think it'd be very interesting, fantastic, and in a utopian world, you know, would work very well for everybody. But those things tend not to happen in real life, and I would be rather shocked if that did transpire. But if it did, I can assure you that the press hearings would be getting probably better ratings than anything on MSNBC. That's for sure. That would be entertaining. No doubt about that. But those things tend not to happen in the real world. I do think that Sarah Palin is likely to run for president. And while I have a novel way of looking at it, I actually think that she should run, even though I still believe that really it's out of the hands of any Republican candidate to win against Barack Obama. I think you're at the mercy of events, and that it would be very difficult for anyone to beat him. But I think that if, Sarah Palin, of all the potential candidates right now, would run by far the most vigorous and honest and courageous campaign. And in the long run, I see it somewhat potentially like a Barry Goldwater campaign, where Goldwater didn't win in 64, but he certainly laid the groundwork for five of the next six elections to be won by Republicans. And you know, frankly, I think Sarah Palin could theoretically provide that same benefit.
Well, we'll all sit back and see if your predictions come true. John, it's been a pleasure having you on today. I admire the work that you did. It took a lot of courage to do that. A lot of people don't know that you took every penny you had and rolled the dice when you made this documentary film. It takes a lot of guts to do that. And you got a message out that needed to be out there. So on behalf of conservatives everywhere, we thank you.
Thank you so much, Mark. I'm glad somebody appreciates it and gets it, and keep up the good work.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.